Music in the Renaissance, 1400 to 1600. Renaissance means rebirth. If something is reborn, it implies that at some time there was a death. What died, and what was it that came back to life during this time period? Learning, living, and humanism were reborn, as inspired by the ancient Greek civilization. Many felt that these things had died with the Dark Ages, or at least lay dormant. The Renaissance was a time of great change. Because of the Crusades that occurred at the close of the Middle Ages, people were taken out of their own countries and saw new people, new lands, and new and better ways of doing things. Through wars, the small kingdoms that dotted the countryside began to consolidate and grow. Again, the merging of all these people helped to open the minds to new and better ways of doing things. After seeing different ways other people lived, many men's intellectual appetites were whetted for even more learning. Men began questioning things like, is the world flat? Is the earth truly in the center of the universe, with all of the stars revolving around it? Is the church capable of mistakes? Is it all right to be happy? Instead of accepting what they were taught, they began to question nearly everything and find new answers based on new evidence. Because of the open minds, great conflicts arose. There were many things that caused the Renaissance to occur. We cannot discuss all of them, but we will discuss a few. Listen carefully as we learn about the Renaissance, as there will be a brief quiz on the exciting concepts that you will explore in the next few minutes. Our discussion will be divided into three parts. First, we will discuss the historical trends of the Renaissance, then the musical trends, and end with a brief discussion of some of the famous composers of this time period. The first thing we will discuss was perhaps the most famous and influential family of the Renaissance, the Medici family of Florence, Italy. The Medici family represents two things that made the Renaissance possible: money and education. The Medici family decided to start a bank to loan money. Just as today, people clamored for credit. And it wasn't long before the Medicis had their own money, and just about everyone else's, too. Money makes it possible for you to kick back and relax a little. When you have no money and you're working from sun up to sun down, you feel more like sleeping and eating than reading books, learning to sing, dancing, playing instruments, inventing, painting, or anything else. That is why the arts only flourish where there is money and leisure. As the old American saying goes, money is like manure. It needs to be spread around to make young things grow. And spread they did. The Medicis hired architects, painters, musicians to beautify their home, community, and lives. Two young artists they helped were Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo. It wasn't long before their wealth rivaled that of kings. Not to be outdone by a commoner, the kings and other royalty in Italy made a great effort to keep up with the Joneses, or in this case, the Medicis, which created a great market for good composers, musicians, and artists, and others. This had another significant effect on music. During the Middle Ages, the church had the money and was the great patron of the arts, and so most of the music was sacred or religious music. Now, as people outside the church had money, they asked composers to write secular or popular music. Even though popular or secular music was on the rise, there was still more sacred music written than secular. The second historical event is the idea of the Renaissance man. Nearly everyone has an image in their mind of what they want to be when they grow up. You may want to be like your father or mother, a movie star or friend or business companion. The ideal man in the Renaissance, the one who everyone wanted to be like, was the one who was proficient in many areas. Even today, when someone refers to another person as a true Renaissance man, they mean that he has developed ability in many areas of learning. One of the areas a man was expected to be proficient in was music. Among the noble composers of the Renaissance were King Henry VIII of England and Pope Leo X. Becoming a Renaissance man, though, was an ideal for which man strove to be, yet few achieved. One who did, though, was a man named Leonardo da Vinci. You may have seen a painting of his called The Mona Lisa, or The Last Supper. Leonardo was a great painter, sculptor, botanist, biologist, and architect. He paid men to bring dead bodies to him during the night. At night, because the church forbade anyone cutting up a dead body. With the dead bodies, at night, he carefully cut them and peeled back the skin so that he could see the muscles. He made the first detailed drawings of the human musculature. So, let's add to his list of accomplishments the field of physiology. He was also hired by Caesar Borgia, a military and political leader of Italy, to design new war machines for his army. He designed the first tank and some flying machines as well. So he was also an engineer and many other things. And yet, with all the many accomplishments he had, Da Vinci declared at the end of his life that he had wasted it. Perhaps he felt he had spread himself a little too thin. The third event of the Renaissance was the discovery of America by Christopher Columbus in 1492 and the journeys of Marco Polo in the late 1300s. Both explorers brought back stories of things unheard of in Europe at the time, inventions like gunpowder and printing, new spices, chocolate and tobacco. All of this learning and discovery was reflected in the music of the time, which grew in warmth, scope, and complexity. The fourth event of the Renaissance was the invention of the printing press. Large quantities of written material were now available at a reasonable cost. Even music began to be printed. Before the printing press, all written materials had to be copied by hand. If you have copied music by hand, you know what a long, laborious task it is. It takes a long time. If a musician wanted a copy of someone else's work, he would have to copy it by hand or pay someone else to do it for him. But with a printing press, a composer's compositions could be performed all over Europe shortly after he had composed it. Music became a very popular pastime. Instead of turning on the TV, which they didn't have, for relaxation, these people would sit around a table with their friends and sing madrigals and other songs together. This was great fun. The ability to sight-sing was valued, much as it is today. Many families had chests of recorders or viols on which to play. The fifth and final event that we will discuss is Martin Luther. Martin Luther, in 1517, nailed his 90 complaints against the Catholic Church on the door of the Castle Church of Wittenberg. The political leaders found his dissension with the Church to be a good economic and political move. They encouraged Luther to start his own church. He did, and it is now called the Lutheran Church. This is important to music because Luther himself was a great hymn writer. He thought the people should sing in the church. Who has not heard the stirring hymn by Luther, "A mighty fortress is our God"? The Lutheran Church fostered and supported such musicians as Heinrich Schütz and the great Johann Sebastian Bach. The crack that Luther made was soon made wider as King Henry VIII, Calvin, Wesley, and many others began organizing their own churches and influencing the musical development in their own particular regions. We have discussed five historical events and people of the Renaissance and how they affected music. We talked of the Medici family and how they represented wealth and education, which two things made the Renaissance possible. It also helped to foster secular or popular music. The second was the concept of the Renaissance man, represented by Leonardo da Vinci. The Renaissance man was expected to be well-versed in many areas, including music. The third was the expansion of the known world and expansion of knowledge, which brought greater warmth and refinement to music. The fourth was the invention of the printing press, which allowed music to circulate more freely among musicians and the public. This enabled composers to become well-known far away from the places they lived. The last event we discussed was Martin Luther and the Reformation. Hymn singing became popular, and many types of new church music began to be composed. Now let's discuss the musical trends of the Renaissance. During the Middle Ages, instruments were used largely to accompany singing. They doubled the vocal parts, which means that whatever the voices sang, the instruments also played. With the rise of secular music, instrumentalists began writing music for instruments without any singing at all. At first, many of the instrumental songs sounded like vocal songs played on instruments. For example, listen to this early keyboard piece written for the organ by an unknown composer of the early Renaissance. The little piece you just listened to is one of the earliest keyboard pieces we have a record of. Keyboard instruments such as the organ, virginal, and later the harpsichord began to develop a style of their own, a style that was unique to their instrument. The most popular instrument of the day was a stringed instrument called the lute. The lute had frets and was shaped similar to a guitar, except the bottom, wide part of the guitar was more like a gourd shape. It had 11 strings tuned to 6 different pitches. It was used to accompany songs and developed a literature or a collection of songs for solo performance. It was a very popular instrument for entertainment at parties and other social gatherings. In contrast, up to the middle of the 1500s, the harpsichord had very few songs of its own. Organ songs and lute songs were about the only things played on it. It was used to accompany or provide a chordal framework for other instruments to play along with. Soon, harpsichordists were composing music for their instrument that was really quite good to Renaissance standards. The harpsichord players were determined to be better than the lute players so that they could get the good jobs, make the good money, and get all the good attention. Listen to this piece written for the harpsichord by the Renaissance composer John Mundy. It is played on the piano. Notice the scales toward the end of the piece as it is played that almost seem like a Hannon exercise that just kind of wander around. And yet, if you compare it to the organ piece you just heard, you can tell that the composers were really searching to find a style unique to the stringed keyboard instruments, particularly the harpsichord. This certainly does not imitate vocal music. The hard-working, struggling, and searching of these composers would later pay off in the beautiful harpsichord music of the Baroque. Thank you. To our modern ears, this music almost seems monotonous. It sounds wandering and rambling, without form or structure. Much of the vocal music sounded the same way. There are several reasons for this, but the main one was style. What do I mean by style? Well, let me give you an example. A rancher and a farmer were looking at horses. Farmer Fred needed a horse to do heavy work on the ranch. He was looking for a strong horse that was big and muscular. The rancher, Rancher Rick, owned a very large ranch and needed to move swiftly from place to place. Both the rancher and the farmer happened to go to the same auction to buy a horse. They sat in the seats set up around the arena. One by one, the horses paraded around the arena and were purchased. At one point, a very strong, large Clydesdale was brought into the arena. Rancher Rick said, "What an awful horse. He's so big and heavy, he would never be able to move very fast." Farmer Fred said, "What a beautiful horse. He's so strong and well-built." Farmer Fred bought the horse. Later, a sleek, trim Arabian horse was brought into the arena. The horse quivered with nervous energy. Farmer Fred thought, "Who would want to buy a horse like that? It is so skinny and high-spirited. You could never get a good day's work from a horse like that." On the other hand, Rancher Rick bid on the sleek black horse. "What a beautiful horse," he said. "This horse is dynamite, sleek, trim, lots of energy to take me all over my large ranch." Both horses were beautiful horses, yet the two men valued different things in the horses. One valued strength, the other speed. It is the same with music of the Renaissance. It would be easy for us to say, "What a crummy horse," or "What a crummy piece of music." We value and we like good, clear harmonies that support a melody. We tend to like clean-cut cadences that tell us when a phrase ends. We think vertically and listen in an up-and-down way. We like a pretty melody. This is the opposite of the way a Renaissance man would listen. They listened horizontally. They did not think harmonically at all. That was an invention of the Baroque. They thought in terms of melody. Let's quickly review how music developed in the Middle Ages. The medieval Gregorian chant was sung in unison. This is called monody. That is spelled M-O-N-O-D-Y. Mono meaning one, or one voice. As the years went on, composers began adding other parts or melodies above and below the old Gregorian chant. This is called polyphony, spelled P-O-L-Y-P-H-O-N-Y. Poly meaning many, or many voices at the same time. Polyphony. So, one voice is called monody. Two or more melodies or voices going on at the same time is called polyphony. The composers did not think harmonically. They thought only in terms of adding layer upon layer of melodies, one on top of the other, until some compositions had 12 or more parts layered around the chant. That's a lot of layers. It gives the texture a kind of static or monotonous feel to our ears. It is like listening to someone speak in a different language. You can hear it, but not understand it. It would be tempting to say our music is better than theirs, as Rancher Rick said about Farmer Fred's favorite horse at the sale. But it has nothing to do with one being better than the other, and everything to do with what we are looking for in a horse or a piece of music. You may want to pick up some Renaissance music at the store and begin developing a Renaissance ear and appreciation for this style of music by listening to it the way a Renaissance music lover would listen to it, and not the way a 20th century music lover would listen to it. Even though through most of the Renaissance the composers thought melodically, as the years progressed toward the Baroque, more and more composers were beginning to become more and more aware of what was happening up and down, or harmonically. They began experimenting to see what chords sounded good moving to other chords. This gave rise to another style of music. We have talked about monody, a one-voice texture. We have also talked about polyphony, a two or more voice texture. Composers now were trying a new technique called homophony, spelled H-O-M-O-P-H-O-N-Y. Homo means the same. Homophony is where all the voices or melodies of a composition move together at the same time. Composers began using a lot of homophony in their pieces. Many of the secular pieces of the Renaissance used homophony entirely, like the madrigal or the French chanson. Listen to this French secular piece called My Heart is Offered Still to You. It begins in a homophonic or chordal texture. Raise your hand when you hear the song move to a polyphonic or many-voiced texture. Raise your hand again when you hear the piece go back to a homophonic or same-textured style. My heart is offered still to you. Homophony was not the only compositional technique that was becoming increasingly popular during the Renaissance. Another very popular technique was the use of imitation. Perhaps you have imitated your little brother or sister, a school teacher, movie star, favorite singer, or boss. When you imitate someone, you try to walk, talk, and act like that person. Imitation in music is the same thing. The sopranos may start out with a melody like this French melody. Then it would be imitated by the second sopranos. Then by the first altos and down through the rest of the vocal parts. All put together, it might sound like this. Now another favorite device of the Renaissance was word painting. In music, we have no paint to illustrate what we are singing about, only sounds. The composer wanted to really make the words of a song live. So they would do things like make a melody rise when they sing about going up to heaven. And when they sing about other things like talking about pain or sorrow, they might have dissonance. One famous French composer had the voices doing sounds like arrows and drums when singing about war. In the French song we just listened to, called Il est bel et bon, the words mean, he is so good and handsome. It is a song about two neighbors talking over the fence a little bit. The one neighbor is bragging to her cousin, who lives next door, about her husband. She says, "He is so handsome and virtuous, cousin. My husband is." There were two country wives saying one to the other, "Do you have a good husband? He does not get angry with me, does not beat me either. He does the housework. He feeds the chickens, and I take my pleasure." And the other lady said, "Cousin, one must laugh. When the chickens cackle, coco, coco, coco day, little coquette, what is that?" "He is handsome and virtuous, cousin, my husband." Now, when chickens cackle, they go, buck, 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 buck. So, the writer of this song has the singers going, coco, 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 day, and that's exactly what they do. Coco, 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 day, all of them doing it different times, so it sounds like it's a big hen house in there. Now, these are fun pieces to listen to and exciting to sing and play. Listen to the first part of this song again. Listen to see how many times the composer uses the imitation game. Raise your hand when you hear the chickens cackling. Coco, 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 day, buck, 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 buck. And on it goes. Did you hear the chickens? Did you hear the points of imitation in the song? The favorite types of pieces for Renaissance composers to compose were the Mass, which is the Catholic liturgy or the words to the Catholic worship service, the motet, which is a choral piece written on a sacred or religious text, the chanson, a French secular song, and the madrigal, which was an Italian secular or popular song written for 4 to 6 voices to be sung. These were very dramatic and expressive songs, many times written on romantic texts. After the Middle Ages, these people found that it was all right to live and feel and be happy. This concludes our discussion on musical trends and compositional devices of the Renaissance. Now let's briefly discuss the composers of the age. The most significant composers of the Renaissance were John Dunstable and William Byrd of England, Giovanni Palestrina and Giovanni Gabrielli. You heard a piece by Giovanni Gabrielli at the beginning of this tape. Gabrielli and Palestrina both were from Italy. Johannes Ockeghem, William Defy, and Josquin du Pré, Orlando de Lassos, were all Franco-Flemish composers. Music Wonderful Music has tapes on many of these composers. For a more in-depth study of Renaissance music and style, I urge you to study these tapes. And now we're ready for the promised quiz. Pause the tape after each question is asked to give yourself time to answer. Number 1. How did the invention of the printing press affect music? 2. What is a Renaissance man? 3. What is monody? 4. What is homophony? 5. What is polyphony? 6. What is tone painting or word painting in music? 7. What is imitation in music? 8. How did Martin Luther and the Reformation affect music? How did you do? If you answered each question correctly, you are a very good listener. If you were unsure of one or more of the answers, you may wish to listen again.